Hello, everyone. This is Vicki Gwynn with Legacy Health's Engaging Our People podcast. Each year, the Association for the Study of African American Life and History chooses a different theme for Black History Month. And for 2024, it is African Americans' influence on the arts in the United States. That is, from visual to performing arts, fashion, dance, cooking, and more. As Black people, we have used our creative outlets to preserve and share our history and empower our communities. And speaking of history, here's a little for you. Carter G. Woodson came up with the idea of Black History Celebration in 1926. Mr. Woodson was born in 1875 to freed Virginia slaves, and he went on to earn a Ph.D. in history from Harvard. He chose February because of the birthdays of President Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, a former slave and activist. So during our Engaging Our People podcast, you're going to hear from a couple of artists. I interviewed Andre Cole, executive chef at Legacy Emmanuel. Andre's culinary artistry is vast. He can cook everything, even his favorite cheesecake. But for Black History Month, we're going to talk about the creativity behind soul food. You see, soul food is embedded in the African American culture, and it originated in the southern United States during slavery, when people were given scraps or meager food rations, and they were creative in making these ingredients taste good. Little did they know that their talent and expertise with seasonings and cooking techniques would create down-home cooking that has passed through many generations. And let me give you a bit more history. In 1962, poet and civil rights activist Amari Baraka published his essay called Soul Food. It was an argument against critics claiming that African American culture had no cuisine. Well, that's not true. And that same year, Sylvia's Soul Food Restaurant in Harlem, New York opened. And yes, I have been there. You get off on the subway stop at 125th and you're there. So thank you in advance for listening, and please enjoy our guest. And first, what drew you to cooking? That's my first question.
My mother.
I hate to cook.
My mother. So,
your mom?
Yeah, I grew up every holiday, her and my aunt would come over and it'd be using the big orange Betty Crocker cookbook. Making cookies, fudge, sweet potato pies, baking everything under the sun. So that's what really kind of sparked my passion.
And what made you pay attention? Because I didn't.
Because it was fun. They had some, and I didn't want to go outside and cut grass for my father. So a safer place in the house. You get all to sample everything. And, it just starts learning. And then you grow up and maybe mom working more, so like, I'm hungry, so let me get in here and try something. And
wasn't that funny? Something. Either you were out cutting the grass or you were inside.
Correct.
That was the choices in my household. You weren't sitting around.
Mm-mm. No, man.
Yeah.
You were going to help somebody.
You was helping somebody. You know,
pretty much your choice in most cases, but you got to get up and do something.
So when did you take over in the kitchen? When did you say, Mom, let me try this?
When did she let me?
When did she let you operate the stove and the oven? That was a big rite of passage.
I think she saw the progression from taking over. I will never take over her sweet potato pie or her chocolate chip cookies, but especially meals throughout the week. And then I think around 20, I got my first chance to do the turkey for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And I did that, and I never stopped.
How was
for good
it?
Good or bad. It was great. It was great. It was a great turkey. Enough for, after that, I was preparing every holiday meal till this day.
You got the job every year,
yes,
huh?
Yes, man. Wanted it or not.
So how did you create? Tell me about your creativity. Because you were just saying that you can wake up and you can write down a recipe.
Credit that to my OCD, honestly. I think about food nonstop. I YouTube food videos. Even if they're not talking, I watch mm-hmm. Korean food factories, mm-hmm. anything food related. And it just always inspires, or you learn something new, or you say, hey, maybe I can make that work at work.
Tell me what you think about food as art. What does that mean to you?
I believe it literally is the same thing. I believe if it had a better shelf life, like a painting, mm-hmm. There would be museums for that.
Oh, that's interesting.
So. Yeah. Because a pot of nice beans that you put on at 6 o'clock in the morning, and by dinner they're ready and perfect. It looks good in the pot, but until you gussy it up on somebody's plate, that full effect won't be present, you know?
Mm.
So I like to, especially at home, I like to make the plates and garnish them how I like to, you know, when you get it.
That's part of the art in the presentation.
It is. It's like that final piece. Mm-hmm. You can make it good and everything, but just like Bill Cosby said, you can put a steak on a garbage can and it's not going to present the same way. So,
you know. What's your favorite beans?
Honestly, pinto.
Oh, yeah.
And like, my mom loved red beans, but I'm a pinto man.
Beans.
Yes, ma'am.
And they cooking that gravy?
And all day. On a Sunday. I still use a little pork when I cook for myself.
Yes, indeed.
And my two kids. And you know, I put it on at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's just low and slow all day long. I'm talking 12 hours till dinner time. Beans are still whole, haven't mm-hmm. broke down. The pot lick is just reduced a little.
You're going to have people drooling on this podcast. So what is it about? And that was the Sunday meal.
Yes, ma'am.
What is it about Sunday and Black homes and cooking? That type of food. That's soul food to me.
Those are those memories. Those are those, just how we grew up. It's love. It's memories. It's spending time with grandma or mom. And then actually seeing people enjoy what you spent all day preparing. You know,
mm-hmm.
that is.
Do you kind of sit back and look at their face and?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I hear every comment. I see every eyebrow or every gesture that, wow, this is good.
Does that make you feel good?
Absolutely. That's what it's all about to me.
Uh-huh.
You know,
say
if
more.
I just wanted to feed somebody, I'd pop a Totino's in the oven or something, you know, but it's literally about that.
It's about feeling good and seeing the family.
Feeling good and feeling good.
And the friends.
Sometimes require you to make other people happy, you mm-hmm. know. And a nice plate of home-cooked meal mm-hmm. will definitely put a smile on somebody's face. So,
there's this kind of shift toward, and particularly I think about soul food, heart-based cooking. Mm. Rather than head-based cooking. Mm. What is heart-based cooking to you? I mean, you kind of described it a little bit. But
heart-based is literally soul food to me.
Uh-huh.
That's what I pull from those memories, those mom, those Sunday meals, those barbecues, all that. I remember even making a slab of ribs. I remember when I first got a chance to make ribs, whether they turned out good or bad, it's more like sparks that innate feeling in your heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For me, head-based cooking is more like, now you know you don't need to be eating all this.
Right.
Right. So, but I tend to going with more moderation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really, I like to keep soul food what it is,
mm-hmm.
Because those are the feelings that I get from it.
Mm-hmm.
Head base is more, instead of feeding my mama salt pork or fat back, I'm mm-hmm. gonna switch it to a smoked turkey.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as everything else I can keep the same, I'm gonna keep it the same because this is what I remember. This is what sparks those feelings.
Right.
When somebody who ain't never had your cooking, and they taste your greens, and they slap the table, throw their head back, and they said, this is just like how Big Mama made. That's what I want.
That's the highest compliment you can get.
I won't cook like this for you for another 3 months, you know, because it's all in moderation.
Right.
You know, but I like to keep those dishes as whole as possible. And then when it's time to eat healthy the next day, that's when we're going to have a grilled chicken breast, a little broccoli salad, and, you know, keep it moving like that. That way we can enjoy that meal in its fullest the next time. I'm not going to use, like, you know, margarine for the cornbread or, you know, make vegetarian greens. And not that you can't make a good version, but it doesn't spark those memories and those that love that made you fall in love with that dish in the first place.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you said the right thing. It's in moderation. So it's not a staple anymore.
Right.
It's not gone. But when we get it, those memories.
And that's what you, That's what you want. And knowing you cannot have this every week, even every month for some people, you know, so you have to, everybody's different and you have to understand that. But at the same time, you can have some, you know, you just got to have the amount that, you know, you should be having.
You know, I my sister gave me a pork ham hock the other day. I hadn't seen one in a while, and because I use smoked turkey. And I texted her, and I said, this is the most beautiful piece of meat I've seen in a while. It was just perfect. It was perfect. But you're right. I was moderation. And I was sitting there thinking, what am I going to create with this? What am I going to put around this ham hock? You know, because I only get one, like twice a year maybe. And I'm going, I'm going to use this. So tell me about the backyard barbecue and cooking.
Oh, that's 4th of July.
Us. Yes.
My family, 4th of July was it. Over at Auntie's house with 30 kids, a big bouncy house, and Andre's on the grill.
So Andre, okay, you got to tell folks, what time do you get up and get on the grill?
I'm an early riser, so it depends. If I'm at home, I'll be on the grill by 8 o'clock.
Somebody I remember else, my uncles.
You know, yeah, just low and slow. Like
that's right.
You know, you just keep going back, checking on it, and, you know, little picnic table, kick back, you know, maybe have a good conversation or play a game of dominoes. And
that's right.
You know, that's what it's all about. Homemade mac and cheese on the side.
Uh-oh.
You know, and then maybe, you know, add a little greens in there.
How many How many cheese did you put in your mac and cheese?
Let's see.
Give
I
got to
do
secret.
American because it's that binder that kind of makes that creaminess. A little American, whether it's Velveeta, whatever.
Patti LaBelle.
I make you some mac and cheese. You'll be a believer. Shredded cheddar. And then what else? What you got? You know? I'm a big, you know, sometimes you can switch stuff up. So if I got the money, then I'm going to get some provolone, some Gouda, maybe a little smoked cheddar.
Ooh, a little bougie
but
mac and cheese.
But if not, I'll do some straight cheddar and American, and it'll be just as good, you know?
Oh, my goodness, because that's the question. Who make the mac and cheese? And it better be good. you know, food is like other kinds of art. Art is about senses and just resonates with you. And I'm just sitting here just drooling over and the pictures are flooding back in my mind of what that food meant. And I'm just so envious because I'm not that creative. Because a lot of this is creativity, you know. And like you talked about that cookbook. I had that cookbook. And it was a baseline.
Yes, ma'am.
And you built off that.
Exactly.
And that's what my mother was. She always had that Betty Crocker cookbook. But then I asked her when she's cooking, I go, Mom, how many tablespoons? Girl, to look right. How in the world do you taste it? I was her sous chef growing up.
Yeah, ditto.
Taste it, see if it tastes right. What am I tasting? You'll know if it tastes right.
Exactly.
What does that mean?
And you will. It means what it means to you. You know, is it too salty? You add a little more water. Is it not have enough flavor? You go through all the same seasonings and you dun-dun, you know, until you feel that it's right. And that's the beauty of cooking. I'm a big baker. I love to make cheesecakes, bread, stuff like that. But that is more of a science. You better follow that recipe or it ain't going to come out exactly how you want it. Cooking it's open to interpretation.
How do you feel when you're in the kitchen?
Happy.
Is that your happy place?
Yes, absolutely. Whether I'm doing the dishes, getting ready to cook, or cooking, or it's just my happy place.
And what other...
I know it's weird, but
No. I have a cousin who's a chef, and she's the same way.
Yeah.
And I admire her because I run from kitchens. I mean, I like them, and I like cooking. I like cookbooks, and I like cooking stores. Williams and Sonoma, I just love it. You think I cook?
I will break the bank in places like that. I try to avoid as much as possible.
It's just beautiful. It just does something to you. When you see this
just
beautiful
something
cookbook.
Different and new and maybe top shelf, this one balsamic or, and that's where the creativity comes. You know, you have to actually see stuff to be inspired by it. So I take trips to Seattle all the time just to go to the market and see what they have. Mm-hmm. You know, from smoked sea salt to a new fish that I've never seen. It's all interesting and... You know, truffle pasta. I try to get some as much as I can.
Oh, my God. Well, so we talked a lot about cooking soul food and the Black experience. Tell me more about the cooking and what it means for us culturally.
I think it's all combined. I think it's what we touched on at the beginning. It is that innate feeling. You can really sit down with a plate, and depending on who made it, it can remind you of people you've loved in your past, you know? And that's why I feel like it's held such a high place in the Black community. You can go as far, and that's anything. You can cook chitlins. There's people in America that will cook chitlins. You put a bowl in front of them, and they gonna remember who made their first batch of chitlins? Who made their best batch of chitlins? Who made their last batch of chitlins? And it just goes from there. So.
That is true, because Mrs. Harkness made me some chitlins about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's the last chitlins I ever got, and I talk about them to this day.
Really?
Yes.
You miss your chitlins?
I miss my chitlins.
Girl, why you don't go make some chitlins?
I can't make chitlins. No, I'm not in my kitchen.
A bucket of chitlins for $80 the other day. Ain't no way.
When did soul food get so expensive?
And when they knew they could make money off it.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
When did oxtails get
$20
expensive?
$20 for 4-piece of
oxtail. Come on now. Mm. Come on.
And that's when, and
wasn't
that's where
that
the creativity, that's where you're like, ooh, I can't do that. I got 4 people in my house. My 18-year-old son alone will eat 3 packs. That ain't gonna happen. So can I be creative with something else? You know, let me get this cheap piece of pot roast.
Is there a hot dog in there?
And braise this down, and you know, it'll be just as good, but you know, save you a couple dollars. So it's that creativity.
Is it still the same since soul food has gone mainstream?
Absolutely.
You know, there's people who don't look like us cook a lot of soul food, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Has it changed? For you, is it still Big Mama's cooking to you? And
no, it has not changed one bit for me.
Does it make you angry?
I do back off a little just because everything in moderation.
Right.
But no, I try to keep every dish that I learn how to make exactly the same.
Do you name your dishes?
No. I don't go that far.
Does somebody else name your dishes? Because see, I got Aunt Sammy's potato salad, it's Aunt Sammy's fried chicken, my mama's potato salad.
Oh,
we got those names in our family.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, yeah. I had to call my brother one time. I got mama's potato salad. And he goes, we'll see. He goes, yeah, it's close.
Oh, now my mama would be like, I got Andre's ribs. Right? But
see,
myself, I don't name.
We know that, don't we?
Yes, ma'am.
Like, you go to a potluck, you know who cooked it. Oh, this is Andre stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. And that's that feeling. That's that love. That's that, you know, if somebody can pick up a rib and say, Andre did this, and just know, and they go back for more, what else are you asking for? Because you ain't charging.
Right.
You ain't asking for money. So,
no, you better not. So what do you want your legacy to be? Or what do you see a restaurant, a cookbook, or
What's going on with all this cooking?
Ooh, that is a good question. I'm not sure. I tend to think more of a small restaurant. Maybe after my kids grow up and get out the house, I need something a little more stable. You know, feel comfortable right now.
Right.
I am kind of thinking about cheesecakes again. I did have a little cheesecake business. Thinking about expanding my mom's cookie business. She started a cookie business right before the pandemic.
Best chocolate chip
cookies in the city. So thought about, you know, working with her on that and just something manageable. I don't think I want a brick and mortar. I don't think how much time you really have to put into those businesses at this stage of my life is where I want to put all my time. You know, I'd rather spend it with my family and friends. But I do want something with my name on it.
Yeah.
In a controlled kind
of. So when your children are grown, or grandchildren or great grandchildren, they go, oh, that was great Grandpa Andre's rib recipe.
I got all of them written down for my kids. Yes, ma'am.
And that's how, and they do get passed down during the, through the generations, right?
I'm writing it because I did have some, you know, information, recipes passed down to me, handwriting, very hard to read or something, you know.
But
I like to just log it more clean and, you know, I got a folder just for my kids, So.
Really?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
You know, I have my mom, my mom passed away 17, 18 years ago, but anyway, I have her recipe card. Remember those little?
Yes, ma'am. Little things? Index cards?
Yes.
Yep. And those are the ones that I received as well. Yeah. A little grayish, bluish tin box.
Yeah.
Nothing but recipe.
Isn't that something? That handwriting?
Yeah.
And my mother has a lemon jello cake recipe written down that she probably wrote when I was a child. And it just faded.
Right.
But I would never get rid of that.
Right. Why would you?
Pass it down to my daughter.
That's the basis of soul food cooking, right?
There you go.
Those memories, those passing down.
Well, thank you, Andre.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you for joining us. I know you want to get back down and cook for the masses here at Legacy Hill.
I don't really want to, but I will do that.
Well, you know, I know you cook for a living, but it sounds you cooking is your passion. You enjoy it, and cooking is a way, particularly in the Black culture, it brings us together.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Andre, for that mouth-watering podcast. You are truly a culinary artist. Talking to Andre about food was like sitting around the kitchen table at your grandma's house or your auntie's house and just talking about who cooks what better than the other person. Anyway, for those foodies listening, you'll find food carts and maybe a bricks-and-mortar restaurant around the metro area with variations of soul food. For some of those who want to create their own, I have a couple of cookbooks in my kitchen. One is Spoon Bread and Strawberry Wine. I have a couple by singer Patti LaBelle. And of course, I have the famous Sylvia's Family Soul Food Cookbook. Okay, wait, don't go away. I want you to hear from teenage artist Emmanuel Dempsey, also known as Manny. One of my colleagues, Thelma Hale, recently chatted with him. You see, a couple years ago, we commissioned Manny to design a t-shirt for our Legacy Health Good in the Hood Parade team. We heard about a local high schooler who creates Black art as a vehicle to promote social and cultural awareness throughout this community. You may see his work in a mural on a building around Portland, but you'll soon see his work at Legacy. You see, we've commissioned him to create a piece for our Randall Children's Hospital in honor of Black History Month 2024. So let's hear from the artist.
The type of art that I do, I paint, I hand draw, design, and do digital art. I've always been one to do like a whole lot of like different styles, different medias, mostly because growing up, I just liked seeing, I would see something, be like, I want to try to do that, and then try to do it in my own style, and then it would just make a whole new thing, and then I would just have all these different medias that I learned and just keep applying to them, keep adding to them, and then just keep getting all kinds of new stuff. What inspired me to do my art was growing up, I always loved watching cartoons, but I never saw characters that looked like me, represented me, or even said things that I would say. And I asked my dad what was up with that, and he just told me to make my own. So that started, that was the branch to my creativity and my journey throughout art, because I would start creating characters that would look like me, that would represent me, talk like me, put them into stories that would relate to stories of my own life or stories that would that could happen in my life, and just being able to tell my story, my people's story, through our lens that it's not really represented but needs to be represented. I don't technically come from a generation of artists like me who like paint and draw, but I do have creative family members on my mother's side down south. My aunt is a hairstylist, and my papa, he is an architect, and he builds like clubs and buildings and party rooms and stuff. And just growing up, always going back down home to the south, where places like where my soul resides, and always seeing that, being around that. And I always represent that and represent them in my artwork, you know, to tell my side of the story and to tell that piece. Through my art, celebrating my culture is a big part of why I do it. And the way I celebrate it is just showing the pure Black joy that we have when we get together. Media doesn't really show that or presents that as much. They present like a side of the community that's not really ideal or not what I've grown up or not what I've seen. I guess the impact that my art has had for me, opportunities. Multiple opportunities to work with companies, to work with other people, other artists, and to learn, you know, from other people and to learn, get a learning experience, and to apply that to, you know, being young still and heading off to college and thinking about where I want to go. It's really helped me think about, okay, like, what do I want to do and how can I get there? And I know who to reach out to if I have any questions. So I guess opportunities most definitely has been the impact that artists had, in along with being able to promote my story and to let people know that this is who I am and this is how it is. Encouraging words that I have for other young Black artists is continue to do you. Like, don't ever shy away from who you are, what you do. Showcase you. Don't showcase anything else but who you are and what it truly is, because I feel like a lot of the times you will be questioned for the things that you do or for the things that you wear or the things that you say, but, you know, always be proud. Most definitely be proud of who you are and be proud to showcase that and to just showcase the love that you come from and the generations that you come from and the people that you come from. Because once you're proud of it and once you love it and once you show it and you embrace that, you know, the rest of the community can embrace that and love that with you, because at the end of the day, you know, we all we have. You know, if everybody, you know, doesn't get it, your people will get it. So always stay true to who you are and continue to make dope stuff.
Those were encouraging words from one of our community's brightest young artists. Thank you, Manny, and we can't wait to see your artwork hanging at Randall Children's Hospital. Thank you all for listening to our Black History Month Engaging Our People podcast, where we share the contributions of two artists. Please read our online publications and look at our legacy social media posts for other Black artists we're saluting this month. Also, be sure and look at the Legacy Health Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion website for how Legacy is celebrating Black History Month around the community. Speaking of artists, I have to give a shout out to my colleague, Jonathan Stevens. He is the audio magician who records these podcasts. And so, Jonathan, thank you so much. You do this and much more. Now, this podcast is for all of us at Legacy, and we value you and your feedback. So please take a moment and send us an email at podcast@lhs.org and tell us about your ideals for stories or how we can better engage our people. Thank you again. Be safe and be well.